Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Take the ferocity of a grizzly bear, the cunning of a wolf, the speed of a weasel, and the elusiveness of a cougar. Stuff it all in a compact, tough little package, and sprinkle a few here and there in the wild places, and you'd have a pretty good description of one of America's most reclusive and mysterious creatures, the wolverine. Most everyone knows you'd best watch out for the wolverines, that is, if you can find one. And if you can, take the time to take a closer look. We do when your voice of the earth returns. Get ready. We're heading on up to the wilds of Alaska, where some of America's grandest wild creatures still roam free. Researchers spend lifetimes tracking caribou, grizzly, bears, sea otters, and eagles. But one animal remains an enigma to most of the world. But not to our guest, who I have come to think of as the Jane Goodall of the wild wolverines. Today we're going to take a closer look at an animal that has intrigued me from the time I was very small. I think perhaps my first real fascination began, I think, with a movie by Disney where there was this strange creature portrayed as a very aggressive, mean-spirited animal. It's the wolverine. One of the interesting things about wolverines is the fact that so very few people know much about them for a lot of different reasons. We're going to discuss that today with one of the nation's leading wolverine experts, Dr. Audrey McGowan, who is talking with us now from Alaska. She's one of the co-directors of the Wolverine Foundation. If you want to know about wolverines, that's where you go. Dr. McGowan, welcome to the Wildside News.
Well, glad to be here.
Wolverines are a fascinating animal, and you self-admit that it's an amazing passion of yours. Why don't you give us a history on how it is that you became so fascinated with wolverines?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, and it's one of those things where you almost can't even remember how it started. It's just as if it's always kind of been there. But in 1978, I had the opportunity to actually do some research on wolverines in northwestern Alaska as part of a study that was being carried out in an area where they were thinking about exploring and developing oil again up in northwestern Alaska called the National Petroleum Reserve. And they were interested in studying a number of species in the area, and wolverines was one of them, and I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to get that chance to study them, and that it all took off from there.
Looking at 30 years' worth of exposure to these animals and their habits, that makes you a very unique person.
Well, there's not very many of us actually that spend a lot of time studying wolverines, but fortunately that number is growing, and the interest in wolverines has really grown in the last 5 to 10 years.
One of the unusual things about wolverines is the fact that there is so very little that is really known. The way that most people are exposed is that they're the name of some sort of a sports team. There's probably 500 wolverine sports teams in the United States alone. But what is it about the wolverine that makes it so elusive and therefore difficult to study?
Well, it tends to be an animal that lives in very remote areas, places that people don't ordinarily get to or at least haven't gotten to until recent years. So it would be high, remote mountain areas, Arctic tundra areas, and the far northern boreal forest, just places where people don't spend very much time. And so they're not very familiar with the animal. They've never seen one, and they've never seen the behavior of one. And so it just doesn't have a place in their minds. But you talk to people who do spend time in those areas, like trappers, for example, in the northern country, and they're quite familiar with the animal, and it sort of has just incorporated into their normal lifestyle. So I think it's just the remoteness of the animal that keeps people from knowing it very well.
I have to admit, I don't think I've ever seen a wolverine, although I've lived in areas where they would have existed. Tell us a little bit about the population. If you go into an area, let's say in Alaska, how many wolverines per acre or per square mile? Or what is your criteria for discussing their population?
Well, it's a hard animal to get numbers on. It's not something that you can just go out and count. It's really difficult. Usually the way scientists try to get some handle on how many there are is by looking at their tracks, and that's a difficult thing to extrapolate from tracks to how many animals are actually there. But there's a few people that have been working on methods, and we use radio telemetry for most studies on wolverines because it's one of the only ways to actually keep track of the animal. And you pull all that information together, and where wolverines are common, which is always a low number even when they're common, we find that you might have reproducing adult females at around maybe 1 per 500 square kilometers. I always have to think of things in square kilometers because that's the way we write our research papers. So, and males are usually, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 times that size, resident males. And then you have your subadult animals, which are just roaming all over the place. And that's where the wolverine gets its reputation for traveling over long distances. It's usually these sort of teenagers and young adults that are just roaming all over the country, and they can be pretty widespread. But wolverines are just locally abundant. They have to have just the right habitat to reproduce and raise their kits, which we call young. And so their distribution in Alaska and other areas where they occur are widespread, but their density is very low in most cases.
This is what I would call the king of the weasels.
Right.
It's a large animal. It's a weasel. It's a member of the weasel family. And therefore, why don't you help us understand what that means, being the largest weasel in North America and perhaps in the world as well?
Well, it's probably the largest weasel, except otters also belong to that Mustela family.
Uh-huh.
And the sea otter actually is larger.
There you go.
But for the terrestrial weasels, yes, it's the largest one. And the next largest would probably be the fisher. It doesn't have the same lifestyle as a wolverine. A wolverine's mainly a scavenger, but it can actually kill animals as large as caribou, and even moose on occasion have been killed by wolverines. And fishers, you'd never, have them taking down something that large. But so, wolverines are just about at the top, and are actually more of a predator than people realize.
That surprised me when I really have done some research on this. They're, about 30-some to 40 inches? Is that head to tail?
Yeah, I would guess that's about. I think of them usually in terms of weight, and you
uh-huh.
have males that weigh 30 to 45 pounds,
uh-huh.
and females that are down around 15 to 25 pounds. So, talking about a male wolverine, it's 40 pounds would be a good-sized male wolverine.
And that surprises me that they certainly are a stalking animal and a predator. And when you start looking at the animals that they can take down, that, of course, has to lead to part of its legend of being such a fierce animal. The concept of a wolverine taking down a caribou or an elk, what's their process of hunting?
Well, we can only kind of, I think, guess at that because so far I've talked to people that have seen the hunt in progress but have never seen it actually end. And so I'm not sure exactly. I think it may differ from situation to situation.
Hmm.
I have talked to someone that's watched wolverines attack wild reindeer in Scandinavia, and I think the critical factor in how they're able to do it is to just be persistent until they pretty much wear the animal out and then begin attacking it. And there is evidence that they actually leap up onto the back of caribou, a reindeer, and hang on and bite at the back of the neck. But we also have some evidence that they come from the ground up at the throat of the animal. But basically what they do is just keep at it until the animal is just completely exhausted. They don't have the ability to actually kill them like a pack of wolves or even a couple of wolves. They're not that heavy and strong to do that. So persistence is the key. It's a rare thing, to do that. I don't think too many wolverines take the opportunity to, unless they're really hungry, because they are basically built for being a scavenger.
That's primarily how they get most of their food. Isn't
right. They're not really built like a prime predator would be. They're built more for, and, you know, and being a weasel, they have, you know, part of that evolution of not having developed into, you know, a predator. They're more, you know, big game. They're more small mammal predator like most of the other weasels and similar-sized animals are.
I understand that they get a lot of their food from scavenging off of animals that others have killed.
Right.
Then they also have a reputation for being, when they claim some animal as their own, that's when you really have to start waking up and paying attention, because that's when they get very aggressive.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think their reputation for aggression has really been blown way out of proportion, too. You know, a wolverine who depends on finding carcasses, scavenging on carcasses, you know, its whole life depends on being able to hold on to that once he finds it and not share it. And the prime way he does that is to take the carcass apart and hide it, put it in places that the other scavengers and animals can't get at, which is usually under snow, in snow tunnels, under trees where the snow is covered up, fallen trees way back in there, or rock crevices and caves and that sort of thing, so that the other animals can't get to it. But it's worth his while if, while he's at a carcass doing this and some other bigger animal comes along, to at least try to act like he's big and tough and intimidate the other animal, because they're not going to take on a fight with a wolverine if they aren't particularly hungry either. And so some of those animals will back off. But basically, it's a bluffing game. And most wolverines, when pushed to the shove, will back off and leave, because they really can't, you know, defend against something that's larger than them and really wants that carcass.
Okay.
The bluff is everything with a wolverine. But I actually once snuck up on an adult male wolverine that was busy trying to chew a frozen ground squirrel out of the tundra. This was in the wintertime, and he was about, had half of his body down in this snow hole. There was a squirrel that was frozen in there from the previous fall, and he was gnawing on it. So, and it was windy, so he didn't hear me coming up. And I initially thought he was dead, because the wind was blowing snow into his fur, and he was sort of covered up with snow. But as I got closer, I could see his muscles twitching, and I realized he was just down there eating something. And I got within about 4 inches of him and bending down towards him, and he just all of a sudden just popped up out of that hole and gave this kind of ferocious huffing sound and then just ran off as fast as he could go. So, I mean, he had all the opportunity to be ferocious if he wanted to, but it basically sort of just gave a little warning sound and then ran.
This is almost sad to take them off their throne of ferocity.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think people want to take them down off of that throne. I think they'd like their miss, and that will probably perpetuate for a long time, despite what, you know, the truth may actually be.
Well, you've spent almost 30 years working with wolverines. Give us a sense of what it is that has surprised you or that you found most fascinating about these animals.
Well, some of the myths that, you know, that we're talking about that are now at least less strong in my mind than they used to be, the ferocity one. For example, I raised a couple of wolverine babies at one point, and I had them here at the house while they were really tiny, and then I took them out into the mountains to raise them, to watch their behavior and get to know them as an animal, what kind of behavior, how they approach life, just because people are so unfamiliar with them, you don't really have a sense of what they are. And I remember when they were really little, still being bottle fed, still crawling around, having some friends come over, and these are trained biologists. And one of the comments of one of them when I was holding one of these little fur balls in my lap was, oh my gosh, I thought they would be really ferocious. And here he's talking about this tiny little bundle of fur that can hardly move around. But our impression of wolverines are of this ferocity, and it's so ingrained that we even expected a tiny little infant to be growling and as it moved around. And And what I found instead is that they are every bit as affectionate and intelligent as say, a wolf pup would be or a kitten would be. And I think that was a kind of a surprising thing.
How does a wolverine kit show its affection?
The really unique thing, the really astonishing thing to me is that they stay affectionate. If they know you well, they stay affectionate. It isn't like when, and I've just heard about raccoons because I actually never spend any time around raccoons. I've heard about them getting dangerous as they get older.
That's almost a universal. After about 2 years, you just cannot live with them.
And it's just totally untrue about wolverines. As a matter of fact, it's more true about otters, from what I understand when people have had otters. The wolverines I raised, they had to be returned to captivity. They couldn't be released in the wild. They came from a captive facility, and they had to be returned there according to the permit I had. And I go back 2 or 3 times a year to see them, and they recognize me immediately and still come over and jump into my lap and do this little chuckling greeting noise that they use with each other. And it's obvious that they're very pleased to see me again. I can still put my hand in their mouth, open it up, check their teeth, give them their, you know, inoculations without having to drug them and put them under or anything. They're just so much more, they remember you so much better than you would expect other animals to, I guess. But that was a real surprise to me.
That is fascinating. That it truly is, that they would have that. I would never have expected that from a wolverine.
No, and even I didn't expect it, and I've been around them probably more than you have, and it was a surprise to me that they have that memory, and not only the memory, but the appreciation that you're still around, that you've come back, and they're very interested in coming up and greeting you. And that'll last for a little while, and then they'll go, you know, about their way, doing their normal stuff, and then come back and see you again. But they obviously remember you and obviously are pleased that you're there, because it's a sound that they don't use unless they're being social with another wolverine.
People who've spent time with wolverines tend to say that they seem to be very intelligent and have the capacity to be almost creative in problem solving. They're reaching solutions to their problems. What has been your experience?
Well, I definitely agree with that. You know, they definitely seem to, it's sort of like, you know, ravens, you know, that ravens have a reputation of being smart and being able to solve problems. And that's just the way wolverines are. And perhaps that comes from being mainly a scavenger, and that you have to be very creative in how you go about finding, locating, keeping, holding on to those kinds of sources of food. But they don't seem to waste a lot of time trying something over and over and over again if it doesn't work. You know, they seem to always try to figure out another way to do it, but they don't give up. They're very persistent in trying to get what they want, and they'll try all kinds of things to get it.
So have you had a chance to watch family interactions?
Oh, yeah. In the same facility where the two kits are that I raised, there are other wolverines there that do have young every year. And so I've watched the mothers, you know, raise their babies, and actually have even had males in those compounds after the babies are about 3-4 months old, the adult male's been put back in there, and so has been an opportunity to watch those kind of interactions. It's as anyone would expect. A mother, you know, really is into her young and defends her young and spends time with their young. This particular mother that I'm thinking of doesn't spend a lot of time playing with her young, but she's very protective of them.
Now, do the young play like typical small animals?
Oh, yeah. They're always busy running, chasing, climbing, jumping on each other, wrestling. You know, they spend a lot of time wrestling with each other, just as little puppies or kittens would.
I know so little about wolverines in reality, and there's so little that is known, it's hard to know. Even some of the females will mate with any number of males in a season. Is that right or is that wrong?
Well, you know, that's a hard thing to tell in the wild. We do know that in captivity, they're hard to breed in captivity, number one. And it seems to be that, you know, they're selective about who they mate with, and you can't just put any two wolverines together and expect them to breed. They are selective about their mates. We have had females in captivity breed with multiple different males, but we don't know if that happens in the wild, because the situation in the wild is usually one male sort of patrols a territory that includes the home ranges of several adult females, and he may breed with all of those and attempt to keep other males from breeding. And until we have more DNA studies done on them, we really won't know how that works. But we're assuming right now that it works often like information we have on grizzly bears, where you may have only a few males in the population that do most of the fathering of the offspring from that area.
What is the status of wolverines now in different parts of the, we'll say, our continent here, our nation, Canada, Alaska, North America?
Well, they're still doing well in Alaska and most parts of Canada where they've always been. The one difference there is they used to be in Labrador and Quebec, and for some reason they have not been seen in Labrador and Quebec now for many years, and they haven't been picked up by trappers who are operating there, which is unusual. If they're around, usually they will accidentally get caught, even if you don't have a season on wolverines. And so people are kind of intrigued by exactly why they disappeared. There was a very large decline in caribou in Quebec and Labrador back just before the turn of the century, and that seemed to go along with the disappearance of wolves and wolverines. But the caribou are back, you know, in a million animals now, and wolves are back. The wolverines haven't shown up like they used to be. They were never real abundant there because there isn't the ability, I think, probably to raise young because of the number of small mammals in the summer to hunt and that sort of thing. But they haven't come back again, and we don't exactly know why. We're trying to find out. In the lower 48 states, they're in many of the places they used to be, except for the Sierra Nevadas in California. And in Colorado, there used to be breeding populations that no longer seem to be there from what we know so far.
Hmm. Well, now you're associated with the Wolverine Foundation, wolverinefoundation.org?
Right.
It's a gathering place of many of the wolverine researchers. Talk about what you folks are working on.
Right. Well, our basic mission is to educate people about wolverines, to provide information about them, and to try to improve basic knowledge about them, and then also to encourage more research on wolverines so that we can learn more about it. So we, although we don't have funding to actually provide to other researchers, what we do provide is a nonprofit organization that can take in funds from those who want to donate money for wolverine research, and then we arrange for the researchers to be able to use that money for different projects that they're working on. And we also sponsored, along with several other organizations, the first international wolverine symposium that was held in Sweden last June, and not this past June, but the year before that. And that was really an interesting meeting. We had wolverine researchers and people interested in wolverines and wolverine conservation from all over the world, Russia, China, Scandinavia, United States, Canada, and it was really a wonderful opportunity to get all these different minds together talking about wolverines and conservation issues and research.
Now, does that legend about the wolverine being this aggressive, fierce animal, does that exist pretty much throughout its entire range around the world? When you get a chance to talk with all these different people, I'm just curious what they're talking about when they think of wolverines.
Right. It has that reputation, but it also has different problems. Like in Scandinavia, most of the reindeer in Scandinavia are semi-domesticated. So they're herded out in the mountains, out in the wild by Sami reindeer herders. And in Norway, they have thousands, tens of thousands of domestic sheep that are left to free range in the mountains in the summertime. So over there, although there's a lot of respect for the wolverine, it also kills a lot of what these are essentially domestic animals. And so there's problems with wolverines there that we don't see in the U.S. That sort of predation on their own, on their livestock, is not a problem here. And in Russia, it's still viewed as a big fur-bearing animal, something that is part of the economy. But that reputation that they have here is true all around the world. You know, they're thought of as being a very ferocious, solitary animal, which again is something we're finding is not really true about wolverines. They spend a lot of time alone, but they're a very social animal. They will get together and meet up with each other. I've seen a mother meet up with her 2-year-old daughter and play with her. We're finding out now that the males, for example, will be found at dens. We don't know if they're in there with the kits or if they're just hanging around, but they're there, and they're not killing the kits, so we're wondering if maybe there is some social function to the adult males that we don't know about that's happening in the wild. So, you know, so far the reputation is the same around the world, but as the research begins to come in, I think it's slowly changing in those places as well. And in Scandinavia, it's considered one of the big 4 mega fauna species over there, the charismatic 4, and the wolverine is one of them, which it hasn't quite attained that status in the U.S. yet now, because it isn't involved so much in lives of people like it is in Scandinavia.
Mm. Well, there's a lot left to be learned about the wolverines, and we've had an opportunity to take a look at least the legend and then a little bit more at the sensitive side of this elusive creature, the wolverine. Dr. Audrey McGowan, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure, and just glad to let people know more about wolverines.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Personally, the legend remains intact, and I hope one day that a wild wolverine and I may manage to cross paths. But in Alaska, those paths were handed a renewed threat from potential oil spills from the Grand Pipeline. What's the word coming down on the shutdown? That's coming up. Don't go away.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.